generating over $12 billion in annual sales, kosher food is big business. It's also an unheralded story of private sector regulation in an era of growing public concern over the government's ability to ensure food safety. The new book, Kosher, uncovers how independent certification agencies rescued American kosher supervision from corruption and turned it into a model of non-governmental administration. The book is written by Timothy Litton, who is the Albert and Angela Ferrone Distinguished Professor of Law at Albany Law School, and it's a pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
What brought you to this story of kosher regulation?
I'm interested in general in the idea of private regulation. I think most of us, when we think about regulation, we think about regulation that the government provides for us, regulation of health and safety or food safety. And in fact, there's a huge regulatory system that is not governmental, that's actually private. So I'll give you the most common example that people know about. If you look on your toaster or any of the electronics in your house or the electrical wiring in the walls, there's a little UL symbol for Underwriters Laboratories on all of those appliances. And that's a private fire safety testing lab. And all of the consumer products that are electric in the country, or almost all, are actually regulated privately by this private certification. So I was looking around for examples of this, and especially I was interested in food. And I wondered what examples might there be of private regulation in food. And the first one I came up with was private food safety audits, the idea that there are many private firms out there that provide private food safety certification. So if you make peanut butter, for example, and that peanut butter gets used by General Mills in their cookies, General Mills wants food safety certification. And it turns out that this private food safety certification is terrible. So if you scratch the surface of any major salmonella outbreak or foodborne illness, you'll find some private safety auditor that didn't do their job. Right. So I started looking around for another example, and I came upon kosher. And what I found was worse than I thought and better than I thought. The history of kosher is such that 100 years ago, it was full of the worst forms of fraud and corruption. And today, it's a highly reliable system, one that I think is actually a model for all these other forms of private regulation. And so this is the story that I want to tell.
Talk a little bit about, first of all, what it means to be kosher. By definition, kosher means what?
Sure. The laws of kosher observance originally come from the Torah, the Hebrew scriptures, but they're relatively sparse in terms of the laws that are set forth in the Torah, and they're more developed by the rabbis. And you can essentially, according to kosher law, break food down into three kinds. There's food that's kosher by nature, things like fruit or vegetables or salt. Those things are always kosher and you can always eat them. There are things that are non-kosher by nature, and those are things that people know about, like pork or shellfish or insects, which are things that people who keep kosher don't eat. And then there's food that is kosher, but only if it's properly prepared. And that's the area where kosher law becomes most complicated, and that's what the book focuses on. And so one area of this is, for example, meat slaughter. You can eat beef or you can eat lamb, but only if it's properly slaughtered and prepared. You can eat ice cream and bread, but only if it's properly prepared. And so there are different types of laws that govern the preparation of food that are the kosher laws.
And when you talk about kosher laws, I remember a commercial from years ago for Hebrew National where for a hot dog where they say we answer to a higher power. So that is, I mean, that's what we're talking about here ultimately.
That's right. Hebrew National makes hot dogs or beef products, and those beef products are made under the supervision of a rabbi who is trying to check and make sure that those products are made according to rabbinic law, that the animals are properly slaughtered and that the meat is properly salted in accordance with kosher law, and that all the way from slaughter to packaging, the laws of kosher observance have been observed. Now, it's interesting that you mentioned Hebrew National. There was an interesting lawsuit against Hebrew National that came down a couple months ago. Hebrew National is a kosher certification that is somewhat disputed in the religious community. So there's a range of different certifications that are available.
So how does one who wants to practice kosher keep track of that? In the sense of when you're walking down 43rd Street and you see a deli that says Kosher Deli, at what point do you say, okay, I can trust that? Because that's ultimately what, I mean, in all of our food preparation, no matter what it is, there comes a time of trust.
That's right. That's exactly right. What the kosher certification industry is selling is trust, is reliance. And so when you look for a product in the supermarket or a restaurant to go into, you would be looking for a particular symbol that's the symbol of a kosher certification agency. The most common that many people probably have seen is the OU, which is the Orthodox Union symbol. But there are over 300 different symbols in the United States. And if you want to learn about the symbols, you can go on the web and you can find out. Now, one of the things the book talks about is that the symbols today are relatively reliable. But if you go back 100 years, there were huge problems in kosher production and in kosher certification. And fraud and corruption were widespread. And so it's interesting to try and learn how it is that the system went from being unreliable to what it is today, which is significantly more reliable.
Speak to a little bit about the corruption. How did that come about and who is benefiting?
There was a huge amount of corruption in kosher meat production. And things got so bad that around 1925, the New York City Department of Markets did a study, and they found that they estimated that 40% of the meat sold as kosher in the city of New York was actually non-kosher. And the trade associations actually put the number closer to 60%. Now, consumer fraud was really only the surface problem. The real problem was corruption. And so what you found in New York was that there was widespread corruption. I'm talking about organized gangsterism in poultry distribution and in meat production. And one of the most notorious examples was the famous case of Bernard Baff that I talk about a little bit in the book. Bernard Baff was a poultry retailer, and there was a group called the Poultry Retail Association that operated in Manhattan. And they required that every single person who sold kosher poultry in the city of New York had to buy their kosher poultry from a designated distributor, and they had to pay a fee of 1 cent per pound of kosher poultry. And if they didn't, then the Kosher Poultry Distributors Association would visit them. And they might set up shop next door and drive them out of business, or they might break their kneecaps or do even worse things to them. Well, it was years and years and years of attempts to try and stop this operation. And finally, a poultry retailer named Bernard Baff turned state's evidence, and he testified against the Poultry Association. And they all went to jail for price fixing and racketeering. And mysteriously, starting about 3 months later, Baff's chickens were poisoned. His summer cottage was burned. His car was blown up. And eventually, in 1914, he was gunned down in a drive-by shooting in the Washington markets. Yeah. The kosher poultry markets. And the murder went unsolved for 3 years. And suspicions, of course, revolved around this association of corrupt distributors. It turns out that after he turned state's evidence, he bought up a bunch of vehicles, he took over distribution, and the fellow retailers, the little poultry shops, all 100 of them pitched in $100 a piece, and they hired a hitman to bump him off in the middle of the day.
One of the things I was going to say to you, I put in my notes, was that this book was more violent than I expected it to be.
Well, you know, when later Governor Dewey was the prosecutor in Manhattan, it turns out that one of the top three crime problems for Dewey, organized crimes, was kosher poultry and beef. So kosher poultry and beef was big time organized crime. There was racketeering. There were all sorts of problems. And it was a very serious business, a crime business from, you know, about 1900 to 1940.
So who are the heroes that made this go from that to what you're calling a model?
Well, you know, this problem was just too big for the government. They tried to pass laws to deal with this problem. And so the city of New York and the state of New York both passed kosher fraud laws. And there were 10 inspectors specifically dedicated to kosher inspection in New York City and about 6 statewide. But there were over 18,000 kosher establishments in New York City alone, and the problem was just too big. And the solution to this problem finally came along with the invention and the rise of a new regulatory institution. And it wasn't a government institution, it was a private institution. And that private institution was the Private Kosher Certification Agency. And the first big agency was the Orthodox Union. And what the Orthodox Union did is they went around to large industrial food operations and they said, "We can sell you a great marketing scheme. We think that if you get kosher certification for your cake mix and your bread and your ice cream, you can sell a lot more cake mix." And so, of course, the cake mix companies said, "Well, how's that possible? I mean, there aren't that many kosher observant consumers in the country." And the Orthodox Union's chief rabbi, Rabbi Rosenberg, said to them, "Here's how it works. If a consumer goes into the supermarket and wants to buy cake mix, then, and they don't know what to buy, they're going to buy the cake mix that is in the middle of the shelf at 5'4", not at the bottom in the corner. And the name of the game in marketing is to get better shelf space." So Rosenberg went to Duncan Hines and he said, "I can get you better shelf space. And I'll tell you how. If you put kosher certification on your cake mix, I can guarantee you a big bump in sales in certain key urban markets, in Brooklyn, New York, in North Chicago, in LA, in Atlanta, in Houston, in Miami, and in Baltimore. And when you get bumps in those little markets, those are key markets, shelf space is going to change in those markets, and there will be a ripple effect across the country. And lo and behold, 6 months after certification, Duncan Hines' sales went up 40% because those little key markets moved Duncan Hines cake mix from the bottom of the shelf to the middle. And supermarkets across the country followed that trend and moved it up to the middle. So once they sold the idea of kosher certification to all of these different industrial food producers, they then had to figure out, well, how is it that I'm going to tell them or convince them that my certification is better than yours? Because after all, kosher certification is all according to the same law. The answer is, I'm going to convince them that I'm more reliable than you are. And how am I going to do that? I'm going to build a brand based on reliability with a special symbol, and I'm going to do two things to back that brand. I'm going to put in better management controls so that there's better supervision and there are fewer mistakes and wrongdoing. And I'm also going to professionalize my staff. I'm going to teach them not only about the laws of kosher supervision, but also about food production and food technology. And I'm going to build expertise. And based on integrity and management controls and expertise, I'm going to deliver better reliability. And there is huge competition for these big accounts of industrial food producers. And the competition is all about who can be more reliable. And that's how you create a system of private certification where what they're selling is their name and their reputation for reliability backed by things that actually make them more reliable.
Just so we have a bit of a timeline, the Duncan Hines example that you gave, what year?
That's the 1950s. So this move of the private certification agencies gets rolling in the 1950s. In the late 1960s, we see a proliferation of competitors to the Orthodox Union. And when that competition gets going, you see everybody scrambling to be more reliable than the next guy. And they start to police each other. They start to make sure that nobody else is making a mistake. Because if the other guy makes a mistake, then you can show that the person who they're supervising, whether it's General Mills or General Foods or Procter & Gamble, ought to switch to your certification. And so there's this competition. Instead of what we're used to in the private sector, which is a race to the bottom, there's competition to be a race to the top, because that's the way you get these accounts.
And this is not unlike, obviously the stakes are higher, but this is not unlike a AAA rating or a good housekeeping rating on a product that lets the consumer know that there is a name that you can trust that is behind this product.
It's exactly the same thing. The things that you're mentioning, good housekeeping seal of approval or consumer reports, these are all private agencies that are making money and fees for what they're doing. And what they're doing is they're certifying products and they're selling those products based on their reputation for trustworthiness. And that's the regulatory system that I'm looking at. There's this huge regulatory system out there that's all in private hands, some of which works very well, like consumer reports or good housekeeping or kosher, and some of which works very poorly, like private food safety audits. And what we need to do is we need to figure out how to take these models of successful private certification and make them work better. And the main reason is because the government's just not big enough to do it all. So, for example, in food safety, the FDA is responsible for food safety inspections in industrial food plants, but they only make it to plants on average by their own accounting once every 5 to 7 years. That's just not enough to protect us from food safety problems. So what you have is this private system that goes alongside the government that's private food safety audits. The problem is they're not reliable. And they're not reliable because they don't have the level of competition. They don't have the level of brand name based on reliability that you see in kosher or in consumer reports or in good housekeeping.
And just to play out a scenario, if one of these organizations, if the Orthodox Union, for example, has corruption within it and there are questions that come up, then does that just erode the trust, or then is there another organization to take that place? I mean, it seems like it's all very brittle.
It's brittle and robust in both ways, in two different ways. If a large organization or any organization cuts corners and they're caught up short. So, for example, they didn't inspect a factory properly and it turns out that impermissible ingredients were put into the food that make it non-kosher and their label went on it. The scandal hits the newspapers. How does the scandal hit the newspapers? Because all of the other 299 kosher certification agencies are looking to increase their market share. And when they discover this, they make no secret about it. And when the word gets out, consumers who are concerned about these things and who follow what's going on in kosher politics and kosher certification will move away from that brand. And when the brand value of that kosher certification goes down, it's a downward spiral. Once you lose your reputation, it's like a lot of businesses. If you lose your reputation, you're done. As one of the rabbis at a leading certification agency told me, he said, Your reputation is everything in this business. This is all about trust. That's what we're selling. And if you make a mistake and you don't come clean right away and clean it up, someone else is going to come in and take over because they can sell trust better than you can.
It's a fascinating story. The name of the book is Kosher: Private Regulation in the Age of Industrial Food. The book is published by Harvard University Press. Timothy Litton, I thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure.
Thank you very much.
It's a fascinating story. I appreciate you sharing it with us. Again, the name of the book is Kosher: Private Regulation in the Age of Industrial Food. It is published by Harvard. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.